Svensson och jag tror det var Sebastian.
Ja, Sebastian.
Just waiting a few more minutes, but you know Tuba?
Yes.
There are some old familiar faces here.
Oh yeah, many.
So, but and the Tuba will be helping us and working with us during this course. So we are very happy.
Okay, let's start. Welcome to the course Design Creativity and Innovation. And I just realized we start very traditional here with an old shark board and sitting like in a bus and so on. But Sebastian and Tuva will soon help us break that up, I think. And so I will say something more and introduce the course next time. Because you are fortunate to get a kickstart into this field with Sebastian Brage Hansen, and some of you know Sebastian from before. He was here in the last course. We have some new faces here. Have you seen Sebastian before? No, there are some off-campus students here. But Sebastian is, we are very happy, he's a former student who returned, and he also know that you can make it through. And he is working at EVRI, and he will share his methods and particularly on game storming, the book Game Storming, that is one of the course books for this course. So, yeah, maybe I say something later about the course, but mainly the introduction to the main field and the subject of creativity, innovation, and design that will be discussed next time, I think. Okay, so Sebastian, please.
So yeah. Hello,
Welcome. I know some of you from before, but since I don't know all of you, maybe do you all know each other, or no? Should we take the same thing we did first time, like going around and like, hi, I'm Sebastian, I do design, I took a master's here, and then just plop around all the people, so I got to know you a little bit and know your background and know how you sort of think. Tuva can start.
My name is Tuva, and I am a second year master's student here in Berkeley. And I'm also the, some of you might have seen me at the makerspace, which you should follow up to.
Hi, my name is Irina, I'm a designer, I'm from Russia. I'm the first year introduction to them.
Yeah, Andreas, first year, graphic design, background in design.
I'm Richard, I'm first year in graphic design, full time.
I'm Joe, I'm a first year in graphic design. Before I came here, I am a leader in graphic design.
I'm Summer.
And we have a teacher in the back.
Yeah, I'm just visiting here the morning. I'm Ian, and I teach the information architecture course. It's something we'll probably take in a year or two, and also do some other things in the introduction to that program.
Cool.
And I'm Anders Anton, and I'm a musicologist, but I also do a lot of interaction design and usability stuff. And particularly in the health. I also want to say I'm very happy that Ian is here, because you will say a few words before lunch, and you will have him later on. But I thought it was a good this workshop or this day is a good reason to invite him also, so you get to know more teachers, but also that we get to know you a bit.
Cool. So it's the same as last time. Like it's a bunch of graphic designers and some cognitive sciences and some walks of life, self-taught walks of life. So that's cool. So yeah, this is me. Some of you know me, some of you don't. So I'm a designer for Evry. It's a consultancy. So I work with a bunch of clients, try to do smart stuff, and this time I love designing, not prototypes. That's yes, I reused this from the last. So this course is about design creativity and innovation, right? But before we can like dive into that, I want to talk to you a bit about what is design. And I don't have a good answer for you. So for me, design is multiple things. What a design to some of you? Can someone raise their hand and go like, yes, what is design for you? So beauty and aesthetics, and then you move to problem solving. Cool. Anyone else? Yes. What is design for you? It's the process. Anyone? Yes, what is the sign for you?
Compassion.
Compassion. Can you...
For your users.
So compassion.
Or development.
So bonding with your user? Or
try to put yourself into their heads, out of your own ego, into their way of thinking. And
empathy. Maybe? Cool. I agree about this, and design is, it's a hard topic because it's like you said, you start off thinking design is this, like it's the aesthetics, it's the lines, it's the feeling, and then you start working with it and you go deeper into it and you discover that it's like multifaceted and it's not really always one solution for a problem. So the empathy and everything like plays into account. And I, last time I showed you the Elastic Juicer by Tony, not Tony Stark, but the other guy. Philip Stark, that's the one. Tony Stark makes the Iron Man suit. That's also a cool design. So this is another thing. Also, this is designed by Amaji. It's designed by Alessandro Mendini. He's an architect. It's called Anagi. Do you know what it is? Do you, anyone of you know this? What is it? It's a wine opener. It's a would you call it a screw pull? It's like you have a corkscrew down here, and then you jab it in your wine, and then you use the pendles or the arms of Anagi to lift the cork out. This is cool. It's playful. So it's like you said, it's aesthetics. It's playful. It's funny. But it's also bad design. Have any one of you ever opened the wine bottle but using this? So, what do you think is bad design about it?
The head.
The head.
I would guess. But it's not as kind of wide, but still not wide enough, and it looks like it's kind of flat and not really good for your hand.
Could be. Any other thoughts? Yeah, in the back, California.
You can't see where the corkscrew actually is. You could like completely get the side of the cork and just not be able to open the bottle of the wine anymore.
Yeah, good point. Yep.
There are other similar ones that have a beer bottle opener.
In the top, so
yeah.
There's a single use.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still, this has an aesthetic part to it though, so it's funny.
Yeah.
So those are all good reasons why this is not like perfect design. But one of the reasons I think feel it fails is that when they first produced this, this plastic part was really brittle. So when you tried to open the bottle of wine, it would break in the seams. And it would break here, so the arms would fall off. And that's not due to the aesthetics being wrong. That's due to the understanding of the materials being wrong. And you as a designer must understand the whole value chain of your product, not just the aesthetic part, not just the user case, but also does it actually solve your purpose? So it's the same with the little juice press that couldn't press juice. This is a screw pull that can't open bottles. Also, like California back here said, you can't really see what you're doing. So it's fun, but it's... I tossed mine out. This one, someone at you posted this to the Facebook channel. I love this. So I drink a lot of tea. So this struck a special chord with me. This is a guy that makes intentionally useless stuff, but there's still sort of, you could use it, but it's not. So sometimes the design will look like it's something that belongs and look like it works, but it really doesn't when you go into the details, and you need to be mindful of the details in design. So cool. Any of you tried this? I think you can actually buy this, or he made prototypes of them. So some of the things on that side is prototypes, and some of the things are just like renderings. If not every one of you is a member of the Facebook group that I took this from, you should totally enter that group and look at that link because it's awesome. Yes, it's Mix 217. Yes. Should be an open group, or is it?
There's a link on the course page.
Yeah, cool. So next topic is creativity. So how are you guys creative? Like, how do you solve problems? Anyone? You?
Me?
Yeah, you moved. That means it's you. So when you're trying to tackle something, how do you go about solving that problem?
It depends, but I first I try to open up and be as open to my new ideas as possible. And brainstorm, I challenge myself to push.
Push what? So do you, when you go around sketching, I know me and Tuva had this discussion last year. She didn't agree with me, but do you carry a notebook?
I do.
So what do you use your notebook for? Or a sketchbook, like this thing?
Somebody tells me something that I want to check out.
So I like you so much more than I like tuba. Because what was your answer? I think your answer was that paper is dumb and you use your phone. Anyone else, like, how are you creative? Because you're a developer, or yeah. So when you make code or when you try to solve a problem, how do you attack it?
Randomly.
So do you go straight to code, or do you go straight to like Stack Overflow, or how does your process work?
Straight to code.
Yeah. So we touched on, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I just want to add to that, because the phone is very useful when you want to share something with people. So if you see something that you want to have some input on, a very good thing is just like to use Snapchat or Facebook chat, and then you take a picture and then you can draw on it.
Yeah, and that's part of what's really interesting about design, is that it's not about you, it's a collective experience. So, like, two minds are greater than one. Like, I'm trying to find a good analogy, but two minds are greater than one. So it's a collective experience. So creativity is you bouncing off something you either see or something that you are told, or a discussion or something. And there's no, my point about going around is that it's no set way of being creative. But what we're going to dive into today is a set of tools to help you be creative on demand. And that's a really big difference about being creative as a person. Like, everyone is a creative in some way. And creativity is a skill that is taught. It's specialized over time. So like a football player can be really creative in football. Have any of you seen The Ozark? It's basically like Breaking Bad. You've seen Breaking Bad, right? Yeah. He was really creative at making methamphetamine. He was really good at it, and he was creating around making this empire out of it. But it all started from him having to solve a problem, like, how do I pay for my cancer treatment? And so creativity isn't always about like drawing, doing stuff. It's about thinking on or actively solving something in a way or multiple ways. So there are, about the books, there are three books. Like, we will go through this today. This is a compendium of about awesome techniques you can use to be creative. I carry this with me almost wherever I go. And that's not a joke. Whenever I move out to a new client, I will bring this book. Whenever I try to solve a problem, I will look in this book. Whenever I'm bored, I will look in this book. It is one of the best books I have in my case, or in my like toolbox. And then it's my little drawing book that I use for collecting ideas. I mentioned Leonardo da Vinci last time. He did what you said. He collected ideas. He collected the things he saw to iterate on them, to work on them, to spark his creativity. And then I always like have a small sci-fi book. Because being creative is not about diving into one field alone. It's about doing multiple things that spark your creativity. A lot of the best designers I know get some of their best inspiration from nature, from like a hike or a walk. It's not about like reinventing anything. It's about understanding a new concept for something that exists. And for me, sci-fi is really, really nice. Did you know that the smartwatch? That was first featured in Dick Tracy, a comic book, like in the 60s. That was the first time a smartwatch was displayed. And teleportation, they've had that in like Star Trek forever. So we're moving there, we're getting there. And the last bit is innovation. So do you guys know these two people? Who are they? You can take the first one and you can take the other one. So he's probably most famous for like the Tesla coil is one of the great things he did. And you, Edison.
Yeah, Thomas Edison, I guess, according to headline there, that he's looking at him as an innovator.
So my
basically, he had Ethereum, he had lots of people producing stuff for him, and he said, I produce it. He didn't really, but he took other people's ideas and just paid for it.
Yeah.
So basically, people investing in technology today, the same thing. Like, they buy in early, but basically he owned the idea.
Yeah. So my point of this is these two, they both created the same thing, like back in the day. They created, alternating current and direct current. So a way of delivering power or powering something. They did a lot of similar things, but the difference between, and they were all inventions, like they invented something, but the difference is that this guy actually made it work. So he is a innovator, because we're still using his kind of power, and Nikola Tesla, although he has like a massive following on the intertubes, Thomas Edison is still the dude that actually powers our society. So if you take things like, let's say the airplane, that's a brilliant invention. But what makes it a innovation is air travel. So it's the same thing, they sparked from one thing, but it's the ecosystem around it that makes it a innovation. And what we're going to do today is look beyond just the invention, look beyond the one thing and see how that fits into a whole. So how can we make that into innovation? So your textbook has a definition of innovation. Do any of you remember it? So can any of you give me, or you don't have to remember this, but what is innovation? Can anyone you guess? I saw you flinch. That means it's you.
Yeah.
Yes. You can pass it to someone else.
Again in your lecture.
Yeah. Okay, I will. So new something. Yeah. Or is that a invention? So an invention is something new.
Well, it's probably sort of based on someone else's ideas too.
Maybe. So? The use of an invention for something is innovation. Yeah, perhaps. So your textbook, when it talks about innovation, it says that innovation is a successful creation and delivery, this is important, of a new or improved service into a marketplace. So AC versus DC, they were the same thing. But Edison, through political contacts, through being basically more connected, he made alternating current a thing we use today. No, alternating current, yes, AC. Even though direct current in some cases is more safe, it's easier to use, it costs less to implement. We are using the more costly, less safe version of electricity because Edison had the right connections to put his invention into a marketplace, to have people buy it, to have people prefer it. And this is true for a lot of things. Like, who here has used Uber or Uber or however you want to call it? So Uber is not a new concept. Ride sharing is not a new thing. What Uber did was they actually had people adopt it. So they didn't innovate, or they didn't invent anything new, but they innovated on the business side of it and on the use case side of it. And that will be the same for a lot of things that we take for granted. Like Airbnb is nothing new. They just made it work with a little bit of new technology and a little bit of new, what can you say, delivering or a way of delivering it. But the user needs, like my need to get from A to B, or my need to get power in my house, or my need to travel fast from here to wherever I'm going on vacation, is the same basic user need. So it's about innovating, about inventing something, or taking something that someone else has invented and using it to serve a purpose that fits your user's needs. So, you know Volkswagen, right? This says innovations that you need. So that's kind of superfluous, because innovations are something that you actually need or crave. So yeah, this is the book. I have a couple of more slides and then we will take a break. So this is a set of games or techniques that you can use to extract knowledge from things. And they're based on games. So everyone has played a game at some point, I hope. Who has not played a game? Who has played a game? Brilliant. So what do you find when you play a game? What are the feelings that you feel? Someone. I'm often raged when I play a game. I rage quit quite a lot. Yes? Focus. Yeah, so you get focused from playing a game. Interesting. So, yeah, cool.
Emerged.
Obsessed. Obsessed. Emerged and obsessed. Stressed out. Fun, yeah, those are better feelings.
Confused.
Yeah. What confuses you with games?
It's more when I start a new game for the first time. Like last weekend I was playing Wii with someone and I was playing like a game I'd never played before. And so my instinct when I don't know how to play a game is because all the time I'm trying to figure out what happens.
Yeah. I think that's not normal, like button bashing until you understand it. You have the different type of gamers and they will approach games differently. I do the same. I press everything until I understand how it works. And then you have the people like read the manual to know that they're not doing it wrong. We talked about, this is a digression, but we talked about user testing last time. And when you user test something, you will often find those two types, someone that you give your product to and they will just like do everything. And then you have the other people that do exactly what you tell them to. So I think that's kind of an archetype to gaming. So yeah, so game is a noun. It's a competitive activity or sport played according to some rules. And it's an activity that you do for amusement, hopefully. And games are built up of five core things. And you said you get confused when you play a new game, and that's often because some of these things are not clearly defined. So you will always have, in a game, you will always have a game space. That's like an area where your game lives or exists. And if you go outside that game space, it stops working, or it ceases to be the game. So for Nintendo Wii, that would be like the TV and the controller and actually what's happening on the television screen. But if you take the controller outside the house, the game stops because you're leaving the game world. Or if you turn off your TV, you're leaving the game world. And it has some players that would be like either you alone or you and a friend or you and someone on the internet. It has some artifacts. That's actually the things within the game that tells you what you're doing, like your avatar or your score system or the bits and pieces that makes up the game. And then you will have a set of rules. And this can sometimes be confusing because the rules, if they're not clearly defined, it will be sort of like a mushing thing. I think, have you guys played Minecraft?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the only like clear example I can have of a game that doesn't have rules. But still it does. Because you need like this pieces of log and wood to make an axe, and then you need this to make a stone axe, and then so it kind of and it kind of have has a set of rules, or it has some boundaries to it, but the player is made to make up their story, made up the narrative, make up everything. And that's also why narrative is not part of this. Narrative isn't essential for it to be a game. But these five things are. And the last thing is an objective or a goal. Like for a game to actually be a game, to be entertaining, to be fun, it must have served some purpose, or you should try to get somewhere. This is also where like long-term games sometimes fail, that they stop having a point. It just becomes grinding or repetitive. And that's really joyful for people that enjoy like the enjoy that what can I say? Enjoy that experience or enjoy that journey. But for most people, if you remove the objective or remove the goals from a game, it ceases to have a point. It ceases to exist. So these five things, if you ever want to create a game, they need to be present, and all the games in this book will have that at some degree. So, some types of games. Are there more? I got like sport video games, board games, political games. Do you follow Trump? He is an absolute riot. Do you think what he's doing is a game? Is it a game to him? Is it fun?
Yeah. He loves to play the world.
Yeah. So is the world his playground? So that's his boundaries.
Yeah.
So boundaries is the world. And what is his goal? What is his...
To make the world Trump world.
To make it a Trump world, yeah. And what are his artifacts?
Some nuclear weapons and some... Yeah, some million people to do as he says.
Yeah. And his rules. This is
it's
where.
That's hard to say.
Yeah.
So to say that he's followed the same rules as Lenin, anything which is positive for his purpose is the right rules.
Yeah. So I love Trump. He's absolute chaos. And also it's not fun. It's not fun being part of his game. And luckily in Norway we're not part of his game, I feel at least. So it's debatable whether or not the first definition of game, like an activity that you that you willingly are involved in and is fun. It's debatable whether or not that's true, because you can be part of a love game or you can be part of a political game without it actually being fun for you. So you're maybe then not the player, maybe you're an artifact in that game. So it's about context as well, or about, what do you call it? Different perspectives. So it's about the perspective of the game and the context of the game. So the games in this book are meant to solve this problem. So the goal for these games are to get from A to B. And this is innovation model. Have any of you like seen it? You spoke about it. Like, no, wait, you said like open and then figuring it out and going through like the brainstorming and the bit. And that is this model. Like you you have some sort of idea of what you want to achieve, or you maybe have no idea, but you know you want to be here because you want to innovate. You want to deliver your product to a marketplace that actually prefers it over the other options. So you need to open your problem, and that will give you multiple angles that you can explore. But at some point, you need to converge into a single point of a single truth and commit to this single truth. And as for prototyping, the faster you can make this happen and the more diverse you can make it happen, the better results you will get here. So after the small break, we will go through our first couple of games that will bring us like in this area. I want you to, how many are we? We're two. So four groups of four people-ish. Preferably people that haven't worked with each other before. Cool. And you are not to allowed to work on a project that you worked on before. So those are the only rules. Four people, preferably people that don't know each other and don't work on stuff that you already worked on. Cool. And you wanted to say a couple of words? Or you can take that now before the break. That's perfect. Yes, you. So he'll give you a short introduction to, and then we'll have a short break, and then you meet up here, and four people, four groups, perfect.
If I could just plug this in for 1 second. Sure, yeah, I can. Yeah, absolutely. Let's see.
Oh, good. Okay, I'm on. So, the original idea of my coming here today was just because I think Anders wanted to let some of the people who teach in the program introduce themselves to you, so you have a sense of who's here and who you can work with. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this also is that I don't see or meet most of you until you're almost done with the program. And so I wanted to let you know about some of the things that I am interested in and like to do. And one of the reasons to do that is that as you start thinking about your master's thesis, and also many people do an independent study, or it's called the specialization course here, people are looking for topics, and I wanted to sort of tell you about some of the things that I like to do and that I'm good at advising. And so I just very quickly put together just a few slides that show the kinds of things I do. and this is maybe a kind of a weird one to start on, but I started off in my life studying linguistics. And so I found that people were really interested in sounds, but I was really interested in writing, and in writing systems, and in alphabets and letters. And this guy is one of the inventors of one of the types of shorthand that's widely used in Central Europe. So you see he's got his gravestone not only in regular Latin script, but also in shorthand. And I spent a lot of time involved with all kinds of other scripts as well. Asian scripts, ancient scripts, Unicode, and typography, and so forth. And in that sense, I have interests which are sort of similar to Ulle Lund and Ulle Vatne. This is just, you know, just random slides I picked out of old presentations. How does Unicode work? You see UTF-8 on almost every website, but what is it really? If you'd like to know, come talk to me. This was Yeah, in the 1980s, there was this huge... I used to live in Iceland for many years, and I am an Icelandic citizen. I speak Icelandic and everything. And in Iceland, they tried to change the handwriting style in the 1980s, and they actually succeeded partially. It's a fascinating story. So I'm also interested in handwriting and how national decisions about standards in writing systems and spelling systems are made. This is from a presentation I did in Iceland about Icelandic letters and their future and how people are starting to avoid them in given names. Numbers are also interesting. They're a little bit like letters, but they're not quite the same thing, and they go a long way back, and they have their own interesting history. So these are real sort of basic things, but then there's more complicated things that we can build on top of these basic graphic and visual communication devices, like conventions about alphabetical order. So this was the very first document of alphabetical order that exists anywhere. It's from the 14th century BC in what is now Syria near Latakia. And alphabetical order is something that's still with us, in fact, in the same very same order. You can see it sort of there. And it's an example of a convention. Conventions and standards are ways that things get organized and settled in a particular society. Everybody agrees on how to do them, like we all agree that A comes before B comes before C. Sometimes we do things a little bit differently, so you know the end of the alphabet is in a different order in different Scandinavian countries, but there's a whole family of conventions all throughout society, all kinds of different ones, and designers are often very heavily involved in them. Here's an example of a conventional system. And perhaps partly because, as you see here, I'm a happy Linux user. I got involved in both free software and open access issues in Iceland. And here's a presentation I did in Göteborg several years ago at the Free Software Conference Scandinavia on Open Access. And then I also got very involved in civil registration and studying the history of civil registration. And this is partly because I have a whole nother career in the world of genealogy, or slektforskning in Norwegian, which is my other job. So I know a lot about how records are kept. And I wrote a whole long article about, this is one of the old Icelandic identity cards, which has both of their two identity numbers on it in the boxes. And so I went up writing this article about civil registration history in Iceland. It's a very designy topic, really. It's all about how you number people and refer to them in data systems. And I held lots of presentations on this and how it all works and the sort of Scandinavian civil registration and ID number tradition. And then last year we had a master's thesis which was based on this whole thing, and then I think maybe you're going to have another one soon. I'm not quite sure. So if anybody is interested in civil registration, this is your chance, or other issues like that, and it ties into a lot of other things that are going on here, like information security. And then there's a lot of cognitive science issues which underlie numbering. This is group 6 on the cruise ship in Geirangerfjord. And this is the two people who are, you know, carrying the flag for group number 6. And this duck is got a number 2. And somebody had to think about this and organize it all. And it's actually more interesting than you might think to see how we number things in society, how we organize the ways that things are labeled and referred to in a computer system or just, you know, out on the street. And then I also have had a long career in the travel industry, which I think is finally more or less over. This was, I think, it's going to be my very last project, and it's coming out in March. And there I am updating a travel guidebook for this same publisher in Germany somewhere, and leading tour groups, which is what I used to do a long time ago. If anybody can tell me where that is, I'll buy you lunch. There's much more I could say, but I just wanted to give you just a teeny flavor of the kinds of things that I've been doing here in Jøvik. I'm teaching the information architecture course, and so we will probably meet sooner or later, and I look forward to that. And thanks to Anders and Sebastian for giving me the chance to talk to you. And I'll be happy to chat more over lunch if any of these topics excite you. Yep.
And you also have some
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have actually a list which a number of people have. I'm not sure it's posted anywhere anymore. We used to have them posted up, but Frode has it, and I can send it to you too. One topic I'll mention is I'm very interested in Asian scripts and Asian input devices in computers. If anybody would like to pursue that. There's more Scandinavian civil registration work to be done. If anybody wants to do a project on the Faroe Islands standard numbering system from the 1980s and go out there and talk to people, it's a project that's waiting to be done. I had some other good ones, but I can't remember them all right now. So thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go to the next one. Fine, I'm not happy. need more pencils or stuff or anything, it's in that box. And California gave me notice that this quote is not actually from that book, it's from this book. But last year that was also curriculum for this course. I'm not sure if it is today, but it's the big fat one that says innovation on front. It's like five principles of five disciplines for creating what customers do. Also, really, if you haven't read that book, it's had anyone read it? The other one, innovation book. Yes, you.
I did.
Yeah. So what do you think about the book?
I really liked it. It's very business. I think that's one thing to keep in mind. It's very about, you know, creating value in a business, but it's a very nice way of thinking when you're working with new products. So it's worth a read.
So the book is basically just a bunch of cases, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a theory, and then it's a case that displays the theory, and then that's like a bit digestion of the case. Mm-hmm. So mine has like 2 billion highlights in it. So it's not a reference book, but it's a really good read up on cases to understand how the context of design and the context of innovation works. So yes, game on. I love that guy. So this is our first game. You have 20 minutes, and the object of the game is to create as many ideas as possible. So it works like this. Each of you take, preferably, you should have like 3 different kind of post-its. Do you have that? Or do you
have
that?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we
have
2.
Only
2?
Yeah.
Well, maybe someone needs a blue one. Not really super important. They have a red one, they need to exchange. Someone need a red one? It doesn't really matter if they're different colors or not. It just makes it easier. So each of you personally on the first kind, agree amongst yourself like which color is which type. On the first type, you write 3 different people. So it's a person, and then write a short description of that person, like what are they, what do they do, how do they relate to you, like is it a customer? Superman, is it whatever. One other person should be older than you, one should be younger than you, and one could be whatever, maybe your age. I don't know. So that's on the first card. So go. Cool.
Yes.
Three people on the same type of post-it. So if red is your type A, then 3 red post-its with 3 people on the one person on each post-it. Does that make sense? Yes, I will turn off the screen. Preferably 1 older, 1 younger,
okay.
And 1 year same age.
And then just some sort of reserve.
filled in your three people, then pick another color and fill in three places or situations. So one on each of the next color. That could be a bar, or it could be a wedding, or it could be whatever. Three different situations or places. And don't spend too much time on it. Just write down whatever you first hits your mind. And then once you're done with your three places, you make three notes with one thing on each note of the first, or like the third kind, with things you would rather do than be here. So for me, that would be surfing on one note, then on the moon on the second note, and then probably sleeping on the third note.
Or situations.
I'm turning off the screensaver.
Okay. No,
that's
for the screensaver.
Yeah, I had the screensaver and the other. I had everything. So I'm turning it all off. Sorry about that. Doesn't have to be perfect, just write whatever comes down. Give you like one more minute to finish up. So don't be like super methodical, just get something down.
Pressure.
Are you guys about done?
Yeah.
Give the last one here. No pressure. I'm gonna give you like a little bit of time. No pressure. So you guys have played poker. I guess you played poker at some point. No, you've never played poker. Okay, so poker is a card game where you draw. Wait, how does poker work? You draw some cards, and then there's some cards on the table, and then you have something, and then you bet on it, and then magic happens, and then you win Las Vegas, and then you're the king for a day. So we'll go around the table. One person start. No, it doesn't matter who. And you play a card. You play one of your nine cards. The next person cannot play the same card that you just played. Next person has to play a different kind of card. And then the third person plays the last kind of card. So pick and choose, whatever. Object is, at the end of the round, you have three cards of different types on the board. And then you play, or you spend a little bit of time discussing what is this situation, what's happening here, what is the friction for this person in this situation, and how can we solve that friction? What can we make, or what can we do for this person to make them happy? So for instance, here you can have Nancy, which is 30, in a musical classroom, but they rather watch TV. What happens in that situation? How can you help Nancy watch TV while doing musical study? You get it?
Yes.
Cool. Yeah. I don't want you to spend a lot of time on this. This is supposed to be rapid. You spend the next 5 to 7 minutes going around.
Okay.
Try to have as many rounds as possible and try to have as many ideas as possible.
Can we pick the round, no?
I'm going to
Ideas and figure more, like go deeper into those ideas that you now have. So the goal of this first game is just to get a lot of ideas of what we can do for these people or these people in these situations we gave them. So cool, yeah. So the next one, this is dot voting. This is kind of simple. So each one gets 5 dots. Or just use your marker, your pen, whatever. And then, in silence, this is just about you. Put dots on the different ideas that you believe in. You're just allowed to use 5 dots totally per person. Put them however you want on the different ideas that you now have on your paper. Did that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like if you like idea number one, you can put 5 dots on that, or you can put 4 dots on it, or 1 dot on it. And so you're voting on the different ideas. This activity is actually better or more useful if it's done in silence, so it's done for you, not as a discussion, but it's for you. The number of your group dots on the paper somewhere, and one of your ideas probably has more dots than the other one. Cool. So we're going to go around, and then one person on each group tell us what is the winning idea of that group and what is it about. What is the friction you're solving? What is the situation this person is in? Who is this? And how does it work? Who wants to start? Okay, so middle group is starting.
Also wanna
go. Self-driven car, so he can both drive and nap, because he doesn't have much time to stop and nap. So he needs to get to where he is.
Sweet. I think I put in time for a small break now, yes? A small coffee break. But before, when you did the post-it, the poker thing, because I noticed some of you did it differently. Like, how did you do it?
We just went in a circle and just put them all down really fast, so then you kind of go through each one at a time and just quickly say one or two ideas.
And you guys did it more thoroughly?
Yeah, a little bit more. We called them and some.
Yeah. And how did you guys do it? You did it sort of like these guys, didn't you?
I think we followed the recipe, yes. We didn't get so many ideas because we wanted to do it correctly.
Yeah. So maybe that's me to blame because it was like strict rules. But the object is just to create a bunch of ideas, and it's not a right or wrong way of doing it. When I usually do this, I try to I tried to play like an irritating or an interesting card based on which cards are on. Just like, don't just pull a card, I thought you were just flapping them down. Did anyone like that or try to choose the right card or to you? Like me? So that also depends on like how do you structure this activity? Do you give people rules that they should choose the card? With purpose, or if they should just go fast through the cards. Like your way was really rapid. You got all the cards down, and then you have a big base to discuss on. Your approach is more opens up that specific thing because you get more time to discuss that one thing. It's no right or wrong. Depends what outcome you want. So whenever you're doing this activity, think, do you want multiple ideas, or are you trying to dig really deep into this one thing? So, small intermission. Do any of you know this thing? You should, not you, someone else. No one? It's the intermission thing from Lost, the TV show that never ended. Lost.
Never
did you watch
Lost? The people on the island.
Yeah. It was like the best worst show ever.
Is that that's
the first few seasons were brilliant, and then the rest was crap.
Well, it went bad, and then it went good again.
No. So what was the good part?
I like the ending. I think it was one of the
when they're like Jesus?
The only one you can like. No,
okay,
this
spoiler
is
alert.
It's how you interpret it, and I think I interpreted it right, and that's
But my problem with it was that during the first season, it's like, oh, they're in limbo. This is limbo.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, no, it's not limbo.
Exactly.
But six seasons later, oh yeah, what? No,
well, they tricked you, so that's why you're mad.
But it takes like so much time telling me stuff that I already knew from the first season.
Mm.
But first two seasons, really, really good, and then just stop watching the show.
Yeah.
So this is from the, you know, all the Dharma stations. They have this thing. Or the Dharma station? Is it one station? Or?
No, they're more than one.
More
one
than
of
one Dharma.
There's the Dharma initiative, isn't it?
Yeah. So each station would have like, they would send like a TV production thing, and this would be like it's a thing to calibrate your TV. Actually, it's like they have the same and not for a little bit. But yeah. It's interesting. Go watch Lost. And now have coffee or something. So we meet back here. Let's meet back here in 10 minutes. Like 10 to half. Or do you guys need more time? No? 10 minutes?
10 minutes. Yeah, I don't know.
But it's
like,
just keep going and get your ideas.
Thank you. Yeah, but yeah. So for this
one you will need one, preferably like a A3 sheet of paper, so a big sheet of paper, and a marker of some kind. And this one is called Cover Story. I'm going to give you the template for it on the next slide. Basically, it's so this is Steve Jobs on Time. I hope you know him. So cover story often is a story that explains. It's like the big heading, like company X did Y. So there's a template on the next slide where you're going to put in these things. So it's the best case scenario for the project you picked with the dot loading just now. So for you, the flying car, what was your thing?
Injected
pool. Different things. So yeah. And like blow it out of proportion. What does this product need to make the cover of the New York Times? Not that a product will be on the cover of the New York Times, but you get my point. So the template is that one. So you have the heading. Product did something. I need the instructions actually. Heading. So the headlines, substance of your story, sidebar is like the facts and stuff that connects to this story. And then quotes, like what do people actually say about this, like when they're interviewed in the media and so on. Brainstorming, that's your initial idea that how you got to this point. And then draw something that like illustrates how this is happening. And the goal of this is to understand more in detail what this specific idea is about and how it will affect the world. So this is your template. Doesn't have to look exactly like this, but try to get all those things into it. Do you want the template on the thing, or do you want this one on the thing?
That one.
That one? Sweet.
And then you need a picture.
The headline would be.
One more. Yeah. Yeah. if you have an
I guess that would be the point. GPS were not really there.
Funny is, if you were one of the early adopters of GPS systems that were talking to you, you would pay for them.
Yeah.
Because they would tell them to take a right turn when they were at exits. Or it would just, if you made a wrong turn, and it would just keep reminding you. Thank you.
stakeholders.
Retraining.
that's okay? Mm-hmm. Too
yeah.
small group,
yeah.
too big group?
No,
of course. So there's a couple of theories about group size. Have any of you read about group sizing before?
Group size.
Read about tiny groups or a
tiny bit about
group size? So what have you read?
Well, I think it kind of depends a little bit about what the group setting is. I think what I remember reading is like having a diverse group is kind of important. So depending on what your topic is, having people from different backgrounds, but keeping the group overall relatively small, I think like 3 to 5 or 3 to 6 kind of is the average, and then later on you can get up as a group with a larger group and the multiple groups, and if you have like one representative to make sure that it helps it, so it's not kind of chaos of everyone talking and everyone trying to say the same thing.
That sums it up. His name, I can't remember the name, but he pitched at a pizza size team. So your team should be able to share one American sized pizza. So that would be 4 to 7 people. That is to get the diversity. What
kind of pizza are you talking about?
Not the California ones, apparently. It's a New Yorker.
I guess those are like 2 to 3.
Okay, but yeah. So like 4 to 7 people to get the diversity you're mentioning.
So that's about
No, I get the one pizza. 7 pizza. No, and when you go above 7, it's kind of hard to have one talk going or one dialogue going. So it kind of fractures up into 3 people talking about this and 2 people talking about that, and you're not communicating as a group. So then it's better to do, as you say, like split up the groups, have them create stuff, and then join, and have preferably one person represent the group's idea. So yeah, it's good that you enjoy being like 4-ish. So this is basically what we're doing today, right? So we did a couple of games. We're going to have lunch now. But before that, just like help me out here. We started here. What will you call this bit?
Expansion.
This is discover?
No.
That is discover? Which is?
The first one?
Yeah. Discover?
No.
No? Who said discover?
Yeah.
You said discover.
I didn't see.
No, okay. Yeah, so expand, opening something. And then you get into sort of like this area. So what will we call this?
Experiment?
Maybe? I would call it maybe explore. So you have like an opening phase and an exploration phase. So we did, we've done 4 games now. So we did Post-it Poker, then we did Dot Watching, then we did Cover Story, and then we did the 4 C's. So where does the 4 C's we just did now, where does that fit in? Or we have, sorry, the last phase. What is this one? Closing? Sorry? Oh yeah.
Ending.
Expand.
Ending.
Yeah.
Ending. End. I love it. So expand, explore, end. So the 4 C's we did just now, where would that kind of fit into this? Expand? Explore?
Maybe somewhere like experiment, explore.
Here somewhere?
There.
Okay. I'll put it on the middle. And the Post-it Poker, where would that naturally be? Or
expand?
Let's call it PC for sure.
And dockboarding, what would that be? In between. Here, somewhere?
It's sort of like you're closing off on your ID, so you're narrowing it down again.
Mm-hmm. Put up loading over here.
DV.
So that's correct. Like dot voting is a way of
joining, like closing the loop. So maybe the model we're doing today is not exactly like this. Maybe it's more something like that. And then you can have, it's not one set model. It's not always this you're going through. Because you can have stuff branching as well. Like you can explore multiple ideas. And this is often more, like you said, like going up in different teams. Like if you open, and then you have two really good ideas you want to explore, you can separate into different teams and explore the different ideas, and then come back and join and do the closing bit. So it's not always like this. But the concept is that you open up something, and you explore it to understand more about it, like figure out what are the bits and bolts that make this thing happen, and how can we create it, and then you converge on a single point or an agreement, so it's everyone in the group is working on the same thing, not me going, I don't believe in this idea, so I'm going to go like up here somewhere and explore my own stuff, because that's not good for the team, that's not good for the project, that's not good for the business of design. So yes, short break, intermission, no, not short break, long break, lunch.